In 1979, a 20-year-old London lesbian attended her first gay pride march with the friend she'd come out with the previous year. With one bound, the three Musker queers headed off into the wonderful world of being out. We watched our first gay positive film, Word Is Out. We went to our first gay discos together, the Union Tavern in South London. And in 1979, stepped out on our first gay pride march. 40 years out and counting, performing The Archive, will be a solo stage show written and performed by me, drawing on my rich history of being the right dyke in the right place at the right time. It will draw on the rare material I have in my private archive that reflects and chronicles more than four decades of a community's evolution. I've witnessed the story, chronicled its story, and was and am still part of the story. There have been some wonderful shows recently which have given the gay men's version of events. So now it's time for one that flags up the lesbians. And the story starts with Sylvester, the 6'4" black queen who rocked our white world when we watched him on Top of the Pops as he came sashaying down a flight of stairs singing Mighty Reel. It was sexy, insistent, full of the promise of good times. And behind it was his message to be out, proud and loud. And there he was, performing in Hyde Park at our very first gay pride. Oh, you gay women, oh, you gay men, come together, stand together, and each other's rights defend. And we had to stand together, because those were the days when the police outnumbered the marchers by about 5-1, and they were not our friends. And as I witnessed at Gay Pride 1980, were only too keen to arrest and assault us on the slightest pretext. During that 1980 Pride Parade, myself and my then-girlfriend Sue were proudly marching alongside two of the most glorious of the Brixton fairies, Frank and Julian. Frank was resplendent, all in pink, and his hat was topped off with a plastic miniature meat cleaver, as it does. I always use that myself. Now, this tiny item gave the police the perfect excuse to get stuck into the Queens a la Stonewall. And they told Frank to take it off his hat, and he put it in his handbag, as you do. And then they came up and said, "You've got an offensive weapon in there, you're nicked, son." So he was arrested and charged, would you believe, with possessing an offensive weapon. And then when Julian protested, he was arrested as well. So the rest of our group turned the march around and staged a sit-in protest, which is when the police got decidedly hands-on. Spare Rib reported that several more women and men were harassed by the police. It was my first recorded moment of participation in lesbian and gay history because Sue and I were two of the several women. 2, 4, 6, 8, is your girlfriend really straight? 3, 5, 7, 9, lesbians are mighty fine. In 1984, 600 of us marched from Kensington to Trafalgar Square in London. And a gay man supporting us from the side had a badge on. I think it said something like, "Fuck, I'm queer," or "Queer as fuck," possibly. And that became the object of some drunken straight male hecklers. So, of course, the police did what they're supposed to do and dragged him away. And Jill Posner, who was photographing the arrest, she got dragged away as well and stuck in a van, as was three other women. So what did we do? We staged a sit-down protest, which I and my then-girlfriend Nicola Field, who was one of the founders of Lesbians and Gay Support the Minors, we happened to film. I've still got that film. As far as I know, it's possibly the only footage. Now, Nicola and I met after I became the first lesbian to join the Gay Youth Video Project, which was given a tiny amount of money to make the first film by and about young lesbians and gay men. This is my diary. I've got all my diaries. And that's how, one freezing morning in February 1983, me and six other dykes came to be in an East London market to film me asking complete strangers, "Excuse me, do you know what a lesbian is?" It was the question. The answers included, oh, some sort of woman-to-woman wheeling and dealing. I should call him a sex maniac. Do you know any lesbians, madam? Oh, no. Are you heterosexual yourself? Oh, no, I've got 3 kids and a husband. Excuse me, sir, do you know what the word lesbian means? No. Do you know what the word homosexual means? No. Do you know what heterosexual means? Oh, yes, it's somewhere between the two, I guess. Sir, what would you do if you found out your sister was a lesbian? Kill her! This footage became a pivotal part of what eventually became the groundbreaking documentary Framed Youth. It was shown on Channel 4, and you can still see it on YouTube. And what do you know? We only went and won the 1983 Grierson Award for Best Documentary. Now, if I say GLC, and there's a few London people here, do you know what I'm talking about? Greater London Council, not Gay and Lesbian Council, as somebody once said to me. If only. Yes, for those of you that don't know, it's what existed to govern London before the current Greater London Authority and before there was a mayor. Now, once upon a time, the GLC was a bit ambivalent about us. And so it did this. It banned us from this family event. So a bunch of us dykes, about 30 of us, turned up anyway to give out gay pride balloons and stickers. And one of them actually risked being mown down by the truck to stick one on it. I wouldn't do that now. Don't try this at home. But then the GLC decided it loved us after all. It funded September in the Pink, the first publicly funded lesbian and gay arts festival. It funded the ill-fated London Lesbian and Gay Centre, opened in 1985. And it also produced historic charters and reports. Now, for a year, I was the lesbian rep on the GLC Women's Committee. Good, you can't see my mullet in that. And that committee did things like this. A special lesbian issue, only for special lesbians. So, not surprisingly then, in 1983, the Conservative Manifesto promised to abolish the GLC because it was a wasteful and unnecessary tier of government. And of course, when other Labour councils started to fund us as well, the British gutter press really went to town. Lesbian became the insult du jour. I don't know why the lesbians in inverted commas. I think we were real lesbians. And there it is again. This is my favourite. In fact, there was nothing lesbian in this show at all. This next one might have some current resonance. We were having a great time, weren't we? Have you heard what they're saying about us? Could it really be true? Have you heard them, all the bigots and shouters? Read about me and you. Everything to fight for, but with everything to lose. Should you come out fighting or stay hidden, how do you choose? Only we know what it's cost to win our pride. So much was lost. They're the things that no one ever hears. It's gone on for so many years. We're not humans, we're just queers. Have you heard? Spread the word. Now, by the time all that was happening, I'd begun the 4 years I would spend at that wonderful London magazine, City Limits, from October 1985, when I was appointed the first lesbian co-editor of the Out in the City section. And this had been created by Brian Kennedy. City Limits was the first non-gay magazine to have a lesbian writer on its staff, hired specifically to cover all things lesbian, both within our own right and what used to be called a mixed gay community. And on just one day a week, I think I was paid £27, no expenses, I had to cover the lesbian waterfront. Clubs, pubs, publishing, theatre, music, cinema, television, art and activism. Although, let me be honest, the hardest thing was working out when it was the right time to include the listing for the Fire Trap Women's Disco held in the basement of the Duke of Buggery pub every third Monday of the month, unless there was an R in the month, in which case it was held on the second Tuesday of the month. Now, during those years at City Limits, Brian and I were at the forefront of the fight against two major enemies that could have destroyed our community, yet which had a powerful mobilising effect. One, of course, was Section 28. Name, Section 28. Born, June 1st, 1988. Parents, Tory MPs David Wilshire and Dame Jill Knight. Distinguishing marks, bigotry, fear, oppression. Godparents, the British tabloid media, an inept Labour front bench, and Margaret Thatcher. In March 1988, a copy of a letter from Thatcher was leaked to us at City Limits, and in it, she said, "These provisions were introduced because of the growing concern about the use of ratepayers' money to promote homosexuality. In particular, there was a real concern that local authorities were targeting some activities on young people in an apparent endeavour to glamorise homosexuality. Clause 28 would ensure that this undesirable development would not continue." We always feared not so much the clause itself as the bigotry and violence it would engender. And this was borne out within months. Women at the Drum Lesbian Disco were viciously beaten by a group of men as they left. Shots were fired at the London Apprentice Club. The Vauxhall Tavern was attacked by a mob. The Fallen Angel was twice targeted by armed robbers. And a poster advertising a Lesbian and Gay Awareness Week at a London university was doctored to read, "Slaughter, the first step, lesbian and gay suicides now." And posters appeared saying, "Death to gays." So, what did we do? We weren't going to take that shit, were we? We marched, we wrote, we spoke out, and some enterprising people did other things. It's a classic, isn't it? You just can't see it enough. Brian and I witnessed the founding of Stonewall at Ian McKellen's house. We were at demonstrations and events in London, Manchester, and Brighton. We even ended up donating. Michael Cashman gave me an exclusive interview, and the Sun had been trying to get him to talk to them for months, and he would not talk to them or any of the other tabloids. He'd only talk to me. So what did they do overnight? They stole all the quotes. So the City Limits lawyers went after them, and News International, Rupert Murdoch, were forced to make a donation to the Stop the Clause campaign. And I took the greatest of pleasure in presenting the cheque at a big rally. "Have you heard what they're saying about us? Could it really be true? Our promotion, such an odious notion. Sad to say, nothing new. It's the same old lies, the same old fears. It went on for so many years. But together we would overcome with deeds and words. Have you heard?" The other enemy we faced, of course, was AIDS. Historically speaking, I cannot remember another time before or since when a health crisis in this country was used as a socio-political weapon against the sector of the community most affected by that crisis. AIDS transformed my life, and I wasn't even ill. In one article I wrote, if you ignored the AIDS crisis, it would bite you on the backside one day. I didn't ignore it, but it bloody well bit me anyway. Spring, 1987. Somebody rings me at the magazine to tell me that Mark Ashton has died. He'd had PCP and was getting better, or so it seemed. And then he just went very quickly. He was younger than me. We'd been in framed youth together. I write a short obituary about him. It's the first I've ever done. I hope it's the last. Christmas, 1987. A friend's been suffering from flu for 3 weeks, but I've just been told he's actually in hospital with PCP. It looks like he's going to recover, but he doesn't want anyone at our work to know because he's not sure how they'll react. January, 1989. Sylvester dies, an early hero from my coming out days. I write his obituary. I now know it won't be the last one I write. November 1989. One of my best friends has been told that 4 years after he was diagnosed with HIV, there is some viral activity. As usual, he jokes. They won't tell me what it means, though, Rose. I mean, it could be waving at me or something. That's an activity. Innes Ryder, who edited AIDS the Women, which was the first book to document the surge of solidarity between lesbians and gay men and the work of women in the early years of the AIDS crisis, told me that during her global travels in 88 and 89, in every community she visited, she met women with AIDS, and always some of those women were lesbians. She said, I found that half of the women I talked to who identify as lesbians now didn't. In 1985. I lost men I campaigned with, worked with, screamed with, grew up with, including Brian. Most of them didn't make 40, let alone 50. It was as if someone had taken a pair of scissors to all my address books and photo albums. Many gay men could tell a depressingly similar story, but increasingly, so could many lesbians. And the emotional, social, and psychological damage was profound. We were all living with AIDS now. So yet again, lesbians stepped up, protesting, campaigning, counselling, volunteering, fundraising, writing, and all too often, mourning. Over 2,500 years ago, Sappho, history's most famous lesbian, wrote, someone, I tell you, in another time, will remember us. Well, it is another time, and we do remember, and we must keep on remembering all of this. Have you heard of the lost generation? They were many, not few, victimized by vilification, sad to say, nothing new. It's been with us for so many years, too much loss, too many tears, but our memories will never blur. It's what they deserve. Have you